You've just stumbled onto the number one podcast for the latest true crime scoop. Murder in the Morning. Because who doesn't love a little murder with their morning coffee? It's Murder in the Morning with Tony Bruschi and Stacey Cole.
From the Hit Killers Podcast, Murder in the Morning.
Karen Reed's defense team pushing for the dismissal of two charges in her ongoing legal battle over the death of Boston police officer John O'Keefe. Hearing just this last week, Reed's attorneys argued that retrying her on charges of second-degree murder and leaving the scene of a deadly accident would violate her constitutional protection against double jeopardy. The case against Reed stems from a tragic incident in January of 2022, if you're just starting to play along with this one, where she's accused of striking Officer John O'Keefe with her SUV and leaving him to die in a snowstorm outside of Canton, Massachusetts' home. O'Keefe, a 16-year veteran of the Boston Police Department, was found with injuries consistent with blunt force trauma and hypothermia. Prosecution argues that Reed intentionally hit O'Keefe, while the defense maintains that he was killed inside the home that Reed was framed. The original trial ended in a mistrial after jurors reported they were deadlocked on the manslaughter charge. But Reed's defense contends the jury had already unanimously acquitted her on the charges of second-degree murder and leaving the scene. Attorney Marty Weinberg, who was representing Reed, emphasized that strong, uncontradicted evidence shows the jury reached a not guilty verdict on those two charges. And we'll play that here in a second. But it should be noted that the jury did not express this in court when this was actually going on. The attorneys didn't object to anything while this was going on. This is after the fact, after Judge Cano ruled this a mistrial, that four of them have spoken up now. So, okay, you're saying this now, but they're, I don't know, it's like doing an NFL game or something, and the scores come in and the game's finalized, and the next day somebody's like, look at this replay. There shouldn't have been that. Okay.
Well, but they the just game's had something over. Like that happen with the Olympics just recently, that somebody had to give a medal back because of some scoring error. It's like, get your shit right during the process. Okay. I mean, I get having to review things, but come on.
Well, I mean, especially with just how high profile this thing was. Let's take a listen to
every I should be dotted, every T crossed. No questions asked.
Let's take a listen to some of the arguments that were made in court on Friday.
The second of the legal issues that I want to address, and they both together center on the double jeopardy clause, its unique history, and its discouraging, if not deterring, if not prohibiting, second trials when there's any rationale that would justify the verdict of the first trial, the first jury, or the continuation of the first jury's deliberations, is whether or not now that we have evidence that the jury was not at an impasse, evidence that was not known to Your Honor at the time that you ordered that they be disbanded and ordered the mistrial, evidence not known to Mr. Valley in the prosecution or the defense, that in fact the note they wrote to Your Honor after the Toohey charge on July 1 was not unambiguous, as Mr. Lally wrote in his pleading. It was ambiguous. It was subject to two constructions. One, that their impasse covered all three counts and therefore would lead ineluctably to a mistrial declaration. Or two, that the impasse was on one count with multiple lesser included charges, but did not encompass counts 1 and 3. Your Honor didn't know what was in the jury's mind, what was in their mind when they authored a note to the court, neither did counsel. But the issue now, and again, it's in the context of double jeopardy, which is such a historic and important clause that was enacted by our founding fathers to give them some protection against the sovereign at that point, the king, against simply choosing to mistrial prosecutions that weren't going well. And the founding fathers wanted citizens not to have to face re-prosecution. They understood the ordeal of anxiety and risks of having to prove to a second jury what they had proven to a first jury, which is that they were not guilty.
It's interesting to see him argue a founding father arguments about Karen Reed.
You don't hear that very often that they reach back to the founding fathers, but
again, but the founding, our court system also was set up where you have to have a fucking verdict and it has to be settled in that courtroom. Not once everybody goes home and says, you know, everybody did kind of feel this way over, like, okay, great, but you should have fucking said it when you had the opportunity, because now you're out in the wild. This is why we have juries that are not allowed to go and read information and consume information and discuss the cases while the trial is going on, so they don't have outside influence. I'm sorry, you've now gone to the world of outside influence, and now you're coming back and saying this? But there's plenty of people on juries who would walk away going, oh, shit, I wish I would have known all this. And I'm not saying they're doing that, but look, procedure was not followed here if this is the route they want to go.
100%. And we are not a country where you can retry somebody for the same crime. That's just not how our judicial system works.
But she was not found innocent on those counts either. It was hung. Another argument with the jury didn't know. Well, the jury should have known. And the defense didn't speak up either and say, can we, you know, get an all or nothing on this so we know what the decision was on count one and three, or one, two, and three? But they never did. So it's not like she wasn't found innocent on those counts, and they're acting like she was. Like, well, the jury, some of these members say that she was. Well, that's great. I can pull something out of, I can hand you a ticket and say, here's my pass to Disney World. I made it on I drew it on a notepad, a post-it. I should be let in because it says admit one. Well, this is not a real ticket. But it is, because I believe it is, and because I believe that everybody in the room when I was drawing this ticket believes it's a real ticket. But it's not a real ticket. It's not.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, if you allow this, then you're going to have a lot of other cases that are going to come back and go, well, the jury felt this way in this one too, and why can't we go back and reverse this or that? It's a very slippery slope to go down.
Well, and I think it shows how much jury instructions are absolutely vital, that the jury needs to know when they walk into that deliberation room what they need to come out with.
Yes.
Look at every alternative, every sort of scenario. What could possibly happen here? And we need to be ready for it. And I just feel like they weren't.
I don't know. I feel like they obviously weren't if they're coming back and saying this. But the defense should have spoken up when they had an opportunity. The judge should have, in my opinion, you know, crossed some T's and dot some I's where they weren't. But she was very quick to go, okay, I accept your response. I'm just declaring a mistrial. There wasn't a counting of the jurors. There was, and I don't know if she even could do that there, but there, she could have said, is this a unanimous on one, two, and three, or is there any unanimous on anything? And that just wasn't done. Weinberg argued that the jury's note indicating they were deadlocked was ambiguous, and the judge should have polled the jurors or sought additional clarification because of declaring a mistrial. It's the right thing to do, Weinberg stated, urging the judge to dismiss the charges that had allegedly been acquitted. Prosecutors, however, challenged the defense's assertion, labeling them as unsubstantiated but sensational post-trial claims. They argued that the defense is relying on hearsay and conjecture about the jury's deliberations. According to Norfolk County Assistant District Attorney Adam Lally, the jury did not return a verdict slip, and neither the guilty nor not guilty boxes were checked for any of the charges. Lally insisted that the defense is twisting the law with their request that no extraneous influence or bias affected the jury. Let's take a listen to this argument.
Quote from Commonwealth versus Gilbert. In a state, simply one cannot assume from the mere report of deadlock that there is any final verdict lurking within that deadlock that may be extracted. Such inquiries of the jury may succeed in extracting a partial verdict, but we could not have confidence that that partial verdict was the product of a thoughtful and thorough deliberation process. The risks of jurors' coercion are too high, and the reliability of any such partial verdict returned is too low to warrant such an approach to salvaging some partial result from a deadlock jury. Simply put, Your Honor, what counsel is proposing as far as what the court should do is prohibited by the rules, it's prohibited by the law, it's prohibited by the development of case law over decades and centuries as to what is permitted. Certainly, the Commonwealth or anyone wants to try someone who has been acquitted by a jury of their peers or retry them for the same thing. That's not what's happened. There was no verdict returned by this jury. Counsel had more than an adequate opportunity to address the court in relation to the declaration of this trial, and the court did absolutely nothing wrong in finding a manifest necessity as the only alternative that could have been employed in that particular instance. Polling the jury then, polling the jury now is simply not permitted by the rules, it's not appropriate, and therefore the defense motion should be denied. Thank you.
See, they're back to their mastery of microphones.
Friday's hearing was terrible. I don't know if they were off mic almost the entire time.
Yeah, but somebody had a microphone right next to papers.
And like, well, exactly. Somebody must not have realized that they were sitting next to the only live mic in that courtroom.
Yeah, it's just shocking to me how some things like this are just handled so poorly. In their motion, the prosecution pointed out that Reed's defense team had the argument or had the opportunity to object to the mistrial when it was declared, but chose not to. Contrary to the representation made in the defendant's motion and supporting affidavits, the defendant advocated for the consented to a mistrial. The prosecution noted they further argued that the consent removes any double jeopardy bar to retrial. Prosecutors acknowledged that they received a voicemail and emails from individuals who identified themselves as jurors, confirming that the jury had reached a unanimous decision on two of the three charges. However, they maintain that they are ethically prohibited from inquiring into the substance of the jury's deliberations and cannot guarantee confidentiality for those jurors. The defense request to dismiss the charges comes ahead of the new trial set for January 27th as part of their strategy to prevent a retrial. Reed's attorneys are calling for a post-verdict inquiry to question all 12 jurors and establish that they had unanimously acquitted her on the two charges before the mistrial was declared. Let's take a listen into the courtroom on this.
We're not asking the jury to impeach a verdict. We're not asking for an inquiry that would be prohibited under the federal rule of 606B. I think the state number might be about the same way in terms of asking the jury for their state of mind. We're asking the court to conduct a voir dire that Mr. Lally agreed would be done if our argument is one of the 12 jurors was biased. If our argument was, well, we now have new evidence one of the jurors read on internet. We have evidence here that the jury acquitted Ms. Reed. What can be more central to the core values of our criminal justice system than to make a judicial determination with a respected and experienced Superior Court judge, whether that's so or not, and if it's so, stop her re-prosecution, because that would be a horror to make her convince 24 jurors of her innocence a second 12 when she's already convinced the first 12. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
What would they be doing if it was the other way around?
That's a really good question.
You know, if they're like, well, we were like pretty much deadlocked that she was guilty on these other ones, but we were confused. We thought we were confused on count two, and that's essentially what they're saying. It could have been either way on one and three if they're going to say unanimous and that the charges should be dropped. What did you do if it was the other way around? I can't imagine they'd be like, hey, let's bring that back in.
Yeah, I don't think they would. And, you know, to the question about, they didn't go into a lot of detail, but a juror, a couple of them had left voicemails. Do we know for a fact that those were the people who were truly on the jury? Because there were a lot of people who are fans that could have gotten a hold of phone numbers and left messages.
For a fact, do we know? No.
See, I'm questioning that because there's been some shenanigans around this trial. So,
yeah,
I don't know. Unless you get them into a room, have them swear an oath on, you know, on the good book, I wouldn't take a voicemail as, you know, gospel at this point.
Oh, it's not gospel. That's the thing. I mean, the argument is if you bring them all back in and question them, they've had outside influence now, too. So
they certainly have.
It's just
they're a tainted jury now.
It is. It's yeah. I mean, I get it. I mean, if I was on that jury and I heard and we all agreed on those things and it was never communicated, that really sucks. But again, this is how our system works. It should have been communicated. It's on you for not communicating this at that point. It's on the defense for not speaking up and requesting a poll. There's a lot of things that could have been done to prevent this from happening. Judge Beverly Canoe, who presided over the initial trial, heard the arguments from both sides during the Friday hearing, but has not yet made a decision. I'll take it under advisement, Judge Canoe told the court, indicating that she'll rule on the matter at a later date. So, I don't know. I mean, just for this thing to go away, I mean, I don't know if they should do another trial. I've been saying that all along. I think it's a waste of time, a waste of money. I don't think you're going to get any different outcome here other than another hung jury. And at the end of the day, what are we doing? I mean, I don't think there's anybody here that really truly, I mean, maybe some that truly think she tried to kill him. Worst case, it was an accident and, you know, she was pissed at the moment, backed up, thought she was just going to go and yell something out the window and drive away, which maybe that's what she did. And,
oh, she was pissed, all right. Yeah,
and didn't realize that she even hit him. Even though she's mentioned many times that she might have hit something to her family, to her friends, to the first responders. But somehow that's, you know, all about the tone there. Like, oh, because I said it this way, you said it more than once, too. You said it a lot.
Yeah.
So that kind of, it's more than just a, did I hit him? And then it was mentioned once. No, it was mentioned over and over and over and over and over. Which may lead some to believe that you suspect you may have done that. Again, not something where you need to go away for the rest of your life or anything like that, but you were drunk and you hit somebody. If you hit somebody, there are consequences for that. There's plenty of people who have been imprisoned for significant periods of time for vehicular manslaughter that was not intentional. I don't see any reason why Karen Reed is above that.
Absolutely. I don't know.
I mean,
I kind of wish it would go away. You're going to have a hard time finding a jury that of people who didn't hear about this case.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we'll see if Judge Beverly comes up with a thought on this, hopefully soon. So everyone involved knows the direction of where this shit show will continue to go.
Ever been so deep into a true crime story that you forget to breathe? Then suddenly, a cheery commercial jolts you back to reality like a shock from a defibrillator? Yeah, that's rough. Skip the heart attack. Search True Crime today. Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, where the stories are intense, the interviews are extended, and the ads, well, they're 6 feet under. Subscribe today and keep your suspense alive without the unnecessary interruptions.